Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Thanksgiving in the Park. Would all in character please join me in a serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, first thing I want to let everybody know this morning is that we're going to be taping the entire meeting for our virtual online speakers. So if you don't want to be taped, let us know and we'll make sure that you don't go on the tape. It's actually not a tape, I'm just old and that's the expression I know. We're going to start this off with Gabriel's going to come up and read how it works for us.
Oh no, you're going to answer it. Okay, all the way.
Gabriel, compulsive overeater. Good morning. Thanks. Chapter 5, how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. He asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives had become unmanageable, powerless over food. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A. That we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B. That probably no human power could have relieved our compulsiveness. 3. That God could and would if he were sought.
All right, it's so wonderful to see so many people here on Thanksgiving morning. It's the best way to start the Thanksgiving. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on announcements today because I got three wonderful speakers going to speak for us today. And we're going to start off with Lillian. Let's welcome Lillian.
Hi, I'm Lily, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Talk about needing no introduction and getting none, right? Can I have 8 and 2 of whoever's timing? Timers, please shut me up, because I'll just keep going. Somebody timing? Timing? Okay. I'll attempt to be concise with the background. So I was, like, fat from when, as long as I can remember. Food, Lillian, I said, It's not my fault. The wonderful thing about not knowing until 5 minutes ago that I was speaking is you have no time to get nervous, no rehearsal. The only thing I would have done different is I would have brought my fat pictures. So you just picture two more layers of like 65, 75 pounds. I mean, the top number doesn't change. What changes is where I am now that makes the difference. But I came to the program initially like 35 years ago and was here for a couple of years. It was fabulous. I mean, when I was from New York, surprise, and there I would always go on these diets and on these programs, and at 10 years old, the school nurse I had gone to because I had back pains, just lose some weight, so my mother came in and said, of course, this is healthy foods, you know, very sensible diet, fruit, vegetable, protein. My mother being a Jewish mother, so, yes, but if it's made with love, it doesn't count. If you didn't get out, it doesn't count. It's the same rules as with kosher. Shrimp and pork, okay, it's not in the house. But it still goes in the body, and I couldn't explain that concept, you know? So I fought this battle forever and would go on a diet and maybe lose a few pounds, get, you know, that euphoria that sets in, and then there would be temptation. I was fine until nothing came. Once something did, I would eat it and say, oh, what's the use, and go right back again. And it was this vicious cycle. And, you know, you look at magazines, oh, look, I wish I could be this, I wish I could be that. It never occurred to me. So I got to say, you could be that if you really meant it, you know? Instead of the bullshit fantasizing, it's the kind of thing that, you know, we still do it. I don't anymore because I stopped myself. So if you really wanted to be that, you could. You have the power to do that, you know? But I want it in fantasy. I don't want in reality have to deal with all that, you know? Adored and admiration and too much money and all. Oh, my God. How would one handle that? So, I mean, I can say we only see who we are by our actions, not by what we think or feel and say, wouldn't that be nice? So I really have gotten to be such a pain in the ass. And I have so little patience when it's like, oh, wow, oh, I'd love to be that. I said, well, be it, do it. At least take one little step on the path, you know, in reality to do it. So, at any rate, I moved to California and still having fought the battle forever and met somebody at a party in the kitchen. Who's, you know, shouldn't, you know, usually I shouldn't eat that, or it looks so good. Oh, really? Why? Well, I just lost a lot of weight, and that was it. And never looked back. And so I came to a meeting here. Back then, they had this gray sheet, which was kind of a diet, but fortunately, since we're not doctors, we're not medical experts, we don't do that anymore, giving out diets to people, because that's not who we are. We're regular people who can share our own experience, strength, and hope, and what works for us. And nobody would ever say we're not nutritionists. I mean, some of us may be nutritionists, but the program isn't. And it's fine. There's a million great diet plans. And you know what I discovered? When I left the program for about 15 years, I got married, I was out of the country, I had children. I couldn't possibly bring a child because if they went peep, I would die, you know? Things, thank God, have changed a lot since then. People can bring babies, they make noise, they take them for a walk. But then it just wasn't done. So, at any rate, I went out researching and making sure if there was an easier, softer way, and I really did it. I mean, I did the pregnant women urine shots, Jenny Craig, Weight Watchers, all of it. And I have friends that works for them. They put on some weight, they want to take it off. They do the program, you see them 3 months later, it's gone. So what did you do? They said, well, you know, I said I was going to go on the diet. I said, well, but I said that too, you know? And they do, and it comes off. The only thing is they don't deal with a compulsion for compulsive overeating that we have and what we're eating about, which has nothing to do with food and all those other issues, but that's not what they're there for. You know, they do a great job at what they do. And I know people on the program have gone to other eating plans and all, and it's great, but I think what keeps you on them is having the phone calls and the tools and the writing and the 12 steps and God, excuse me, probably in the wrong order, but God and the higher power. And today, being Thanksgiving, I'm especially feeling grateful because about a year and a half ago I did a half marathon. And, you know, 13 miles and all, it was great. And I had such knee problems from that. As friends of mine said, what the hell, did you start that exercising crap? Until then, you're fine, you know? Now, you can't walk. You're limping like an old lady. I mean, so I went to the chiropractor and the physical therapist, and we did stretches and different things. And about 2 months ago, my regular doctor said, let's try cortisone shot. Boom. Done. Before I said yes, no, it's been 8 weeks, and thank you, God. It's like, I'm back. And I know it doesn't last forever, and I know it could eat away at your bones if you do it too much, and all the negatives, which I heard immediately, you know? But in the meantime, it's so positive, and I'm so grateful for stuff that I always had. And I was like the healthy one of my friends who were my age, who were a little younger, but they seem to be getting old. I don't get it. But I was the one, like, my eyes, I could see the menu, you know, and I could walk fast, and I'd be, come on. And then my kids, who were both taller than me, and I'm taller than mine. There's really something to this. You know, each generation seems to be. And now they will be walking. Come on. God, there is a payback and there is a justice. But what the program did for me, which now I've been abstaining for 14 years, July 3rd, lost, like I said, about 65, 75 pounds. Whether I should say I'm maintaining or abstaining, I don't know. I'll talk to my sponsor. But for the moment, I seem to have been at a weight for about 12 years, you know? So I'm thinking maybe I should accept it. I don't know, but then there are moments when I'll say, no, tighten up the abstinence, eliminate this or eliminate that. Things that we know we can do, because I know when I came in, I was like, you know, I can do anything. And the very first night, it was the Hollywood Bowl with my chicken breast, my carrot sticks, my celery sticks. And you know how people eat, so taste this. Oh, this is so good. And sitting there, I'm thinking, if I make it through this one, I can make it through anything. Because how often is it literally under your nose, you know? And God got me through that. And through a lot of other things. And the important thing I discovered is that it didn't take away the right to be miserable, to be unhappy, to get depressed about things and all. But early on, this abstinence one day, I said, oh, God, I feel like crying. My son said, just cry. You know? And I said, well, I never thought of that. It would be too busy to shovel in the food so you don't have to feel it. And you know, the feeling it wasn't so bad. And then when it's over and you've written or have done or made phone calls, whatever the particular thing is, I'm like flying. And I don't have to wake up in the morning with that, oh shit, did I really eat all that? Oh my God, how could I? What do I feel? And it's true. You know what they say about Thanksgiving Day for OA is like New Year's Eve for AA. It's for the amateurs. Leave it to them, you know? People that could, they'll binge for the day or the martyrs will say, oh, so that's it. Okay, eat some more. You'll be back on tomorrow. God forbid, because I don't know that there is a tomorrow. And I don't know that I can go through this again. And frankly, there is nothing, the most important thing I can say, there is nothing that tastes good enough to find out, to have to try. Because I've tasted everything. A little more this, a little less of that. But really, I have. And I see gorgeous looking foods, and if I can stop the connection from my eye, say, oh, it's gorgeous. Or I can smell it, no calories, you know? And just say, it's like a picture. It's like these gorgeous boutique stores you go by. When you see the windows, it's gorgeous. But I don't want one little thing in that window. I want everything in unlimited quantities. And as soon as someone says, you just have a little bite. Well, I don't do little bites, you know? I mean, I have my 3 meals a day and snacks sometimes of foods. I can't do sugars and breads and all the really fun foods. And sometimes I feel really bored about food. The great thing about Thanksgiving is the sweets are not really a big deal with it, you know? It's so much more like proteins, carbs, and the kind of stuff I can deal with and sort of eat like a lady and maybe leave a crumb on the plate or something, you know? And anyway, so the program has given me like a whole second life that I'm exceptionally grateful for today, especially being Thanksgiving. And I think I'll let some of our wonderful, wonderful talkers talk. So thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, that's Lillian. Well, we do have one announcement and probably a couple others before the day is over. And we're going to have a very special guest come up. And Harriet is here today to tell you about the birthday party.
Oi, they. Hello, everybody. How are you? This is my dog, Lila. I hope you all come up and say hello. Anyway, I didn't know I was talking about the birthday party, so I don't know what to say about it. It's in February, what is it, February what? February 23rd to 25, and we have online registration, or you can register here, right, with Chaya. And, but I did want to talk about the birthday party candles, because I'm very proud of them. There are these lovely little Stay for the Miracle in a polypropylene box. Woo-hoo! Okay, they're $4 each, or 3 for 10. And, let's see, four flavors. There's jasmine, lavender, peppermint, and green tea. Okay? And they burn for 8 days. That's really special, right? And that's it. So come on over to the table and say hello to my dog, all right? Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, without any further ado, I'm not going to tell you who the next speaker is, except his name is John.
Hi, I'm John, Compulsive Eater. Wow, look at this group here. You know, it's interesting. I have a very small family in terms of in nuclear family, and this is more of my family. I look around, I see people who I've had long conversations with, much more interaction with than my regular family, and it's just sort of neat, and I wish you all a happy Thanksgiving, and thank you, Darwin, for asking me. And it's interesting. I don't really feel like talking about food today. I know this is a food day. Everybody's got to go deal with all that. You know, the usual Thanksgiving at my house was, you know, getting stuffed, and then you come and look at my living room about 2 and 4 in the afternoon, and it looked like there was a gas leak, because everybody's... I want to talk about program because, I don't know about you guys, but I've been coming to both programs for 25 years now, and a good 24 plus years ago, I remember talking to a sponsor, fetching about all of the horrible problems in my life and how, oh my God, how bad this is happening, and this and you know, this whole source of my life, and if that kind of thing happens, you know what a good sponsor is going to tell you to do, don't you? Anybody know? Write a gratitude list. And then, if I remember the first time somebody told me to write a gratitude list, I rolled my eyes. I'm like, oh, I can't believe this hokey program and all this stuff. But I went and did it, you know, and I wrote this gratitude list and came back and read it to him. And, you know, it had things like, you know, I'm grateful like God gave me a great mind and this and that. And I read this list down and he listened very patiently. And when I was done, he said, you know, you set the bar awfully high there, didn't you? And I went, what do you mean? He says, well, you didn't talk about you have two legs. You have two arms. You have eyes. You can see. You can hear. You were born in America, you know. You know, where does it say that you weren't meant to, you know, be born without legs on the streets of Calcutta with no family? Just the grace of God. And it really did get me seeing that my perspective on life when it comes to stuff like that is skewed. I tend to take all the things that I have for granted most of the time and gripe about the things that I don't. And, you know, if there was ever a city where you have a choice of which way you want to point to look at for comparison, I can turn and compare myself up to Bel Air or down to South Central. And you know what? I'm way in the middle on everything. And that's what I really realized. And it's just fine. And I know on that first gratitude list, one of the things I probably didn't write was that I'm grateful for program, and I'm grateful for the 12 steps, and I'm grateful for what was been outlined in the big book, because I hadn't experienced any of the gifts at that time as to what you get when you do that. And this has been a very emotional couple of months for me, and especially the last couple of years, because I have started to see what the promises are all about. You know, I've recited them for years, and everything made, you know, intellectual sense, but it really started sinking in a couple of years ago, and this year in particular. You know, I have watched the personality change, especially in the last few years. I walked around, and you'll see this a lot with men more than anything. We tend to take all of our emotions and channel them toward anger. Because that's a macho emotion, you know. You know, being afraid, fear, that's not very macho. Having hurt, that's not very macho. So we end up taking it all and it becomes angry. And I used to say I walked around most of my life 5 degrees off boiling at any moment. Now, I could be perfectly friendly with you and everything's going fine because I'm not being brought that 5 degrees up. But it would be very easy to make me angry and I would tend to have a very dismal attitude about life. And part of that is the family in which I was raised. I can look back, you know, when I would go home to visit my mother and see that there was a very negative attitude about things and everybody's out to get you, you know. I'm in another program where they have these 20 questions and one of them is, do you think that society, that people in society in general are out to get you? And I remember laughing saying, I think my mother actually sat me down and said, people and society in general are out to get you. It was certainly what you got, you know. Be careful, be on your guard, walk through life, you know. And so I would go through life making sure I had everything covered so that I didn't get hurt, I didn't get screwed, I didn't have this. And you know what? I don't want to live that way anymore because that comes with a price. You know what? I tend now, I mean, okay, this is going to sound, I'm going to pontificate for a second. There's a movie out right now, and it's very funny, I'm sure, comedy, where a guy goes out and he sets up this phony kind of film thing, and then he makes fun of people who have come to be interviewed. Now, I'm not saying most of these people don't deserve a little of it, but I have trouble watching that kind of thing because these people sat down with an open mind and to be genuine and honest to help this person, and then the person turned around. And you know what? These days, I'll be that person that happens to. I'm not going to be, this person's out to turn the tables on me, because I don't want to live that way anymore, you know? What's happened to me in the last couple of months that I think I'll talk about, because I can see the value of this program, you know? That thing they said in the promises, we'll intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle us. For a long time, I didn't get that, and all of a sudden, you find yourself starting to turn around and go, wow, I intuitively handle that. That would have baffled me before, and not understanding that. You know, a couple of years ago on Christmas Day, I had a major car accident where a car just cut in front of me and hit me and went off and left me. It was all his fault, but he took off. And so did the three witnesses that could help me. And I remember sitting here waiting for like 2 months afterwards, where's the anger? Where's the anger? And I'm thinking, something's wrong. Where, you know? And it never came. I was hurt. I was annoyed. But I didn't walk around with that. That would have been good for 6 months of gut churning before. The other thing that happened to me is somewhere, I don't remember the date, but it was between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I got a call that my mother got sick and got rushed to the hospital back east. And, you know, my mother's always been one of these people. She wanted her distance. She wanted her, you know, it's okay, I'm fine. And she said, I'd like you to be here. And that was a sign that something was going on. So I ended up getting on a plane, going back there and being with her, and she was very sick, and she has real serious lung stuff, and they didn't know if she was going to pull through. And I spent about 2+ weeks in this intensive care unit, you know? And it's where, you know, I remember somewhere it got in here, at probably in my first couple of weeks in program, when the stuff hits the fan, go to meetings, keep going, keep contact. And I was going to meetings of all my different 12-step programs every day, maybe twice a day. And I was utilizing the assets that were there, the people who could help me, you know. I would talk, you know, and I have a half-brother, and he called at one point, and he said, you know, you're so much stronger than me. And I go, no, I'm not. I just learned a different way of doing things from what my family of origin taught me, and the family I really care about now did teach me that you don't have to go through life alone. You don't have to be an island. You can get help. And thank God for my sponsor. I spoke with him every day, if not more than once a day. He told me, call me anytime you need to. I'm talking to people after meetings and getting help. And when you're dealing with the kind of life and death situation I had there, it was important, and to remember exactly what I learned. And somewhere along the line, it really did get in. You know, I for years wanted to get this intellectual idea of a God, God, and I gave it up a long time ago. I don't know why. There's another one of those baffling things. I have to understand everything. I've got that kind of engineering brain, so I want to take apart and have the schematic for God. Because if I have the schematic for God, then I can believe in it. And you know what I realized? It's never going to be that way, you know? There was a guy back east who used to say, God can't be understood with the head, it has to be felt with the heart. And I really did get that at some point. You know, there's a phrase, a Jewish word, kasher, you know, what will be, will be. And I really was getting that. And I was hanging out at that, in the ICU. And one of the nurses, ironically, one of the charge nurses turned out to be in AA for 7 years. And we ended up talking program a bit. And she said to me one point, she said, you know, it's really interesting because usually the relatives of the people drive you crazy. You know, us crazy. You know, because always, did you do this? Did you do this? Have you done this? Have you done this? You know, she's doing this. Should be. And I said, yeah, well, it's because they're afraid. They're afraid. They want to grasp some kind of feeling of control, you know. And the longer I'm around, the more I get this. All these things I did my entire life weren't things for control. They were illusions of control. That's all they ever were. They were illusions of control. And that, you know, and I really did get that. And I got that I'm powerless, you know. And it was tough. And one of the assets I utilized while I was there was a chaplain. Now, if you told me 20 years ago I was going to go utilize a chaplain at a hospital, like, you know, and I went and talked to him. I said, you know, I'm in this 12-step program that teaches me I'm not God, which I really do get. But I've been given this thing about, you know, end of life stuff, they call it. And, you know, you know, do we turn it off then? Do we pull this out? What do we do? And I really felt like I was being asked, you know, to be God. And he helped me with that. He really did. He said, no, you know, there's a big difference between having to deal with somebody who's temporarily sick or, you know, the next step. And it's a sort of a tough times we live in where, you know, as I was saying to somebody the other day, we can keep the meat warm a lot longer than the person's really alive, you know. And so I was able to figure out where that was. And at the same time, while this was going on, this was a 2.5-week ordeal where the doctor kept going, okay, well, we'll see about taking her off this thing tomorrow. Well, you know. And I was just more and more frustrated because it kept being one day after another, and I'm like in Groundhog Day because my life's on hold back here, and I'm there, and I'm living in her apartment in the senior complex. It's strange. But it was such a microcosm of my life because I got to see afterwards that everything happened exactly, that 2.5 weeks happened exactly the way it needed to, and I couldn't see it until I was done and turned around and looked backwards. And so much of my life has been that. When I'm in the crap, I can't get it, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, and then when it's done, I turn around and look back and go, that's exactly the way things were supposed to happen. And when I got there, I was a little frustrated. You know, early on, she had said, well, you know, it's okay, let me go, that kind of thing, on one hand, and then she also said she was afraid on another. And, you know, I remember going to talk to the chaplain going, you know, I've really gotten it on a core level. I'm not afraid. If I'm meant to go tomorrow, it's okay. I don't want to, but it's okay. How can I help her? And he said, well, you know, it's one of those things, it's a process, maybe she'll get there. Well, what happened about 2 plus weeks in, she wrote, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go. And at this point, I began to realize this wasn't getting better and that it won't, you know. And the gift and the intuitive thing was, I said, okay, maybe you are. You know, and I didn't try and hide it. I didn't want to make myself feel good and go, oh, no, don't feel me crazy. I said, maybe it is, you know. And I went and talked to both my sponsor, the person I'm dating is a psychologist, and she helped me with this and said, you know, you may want to let her know it's okay, you know. And I went back the next morning, and I had a talk with her. You know, she was getting unresponsive, but I talked to her and said, you know, I'm going to be fine. My brother is fine. He's going to move down near me. We'll be able to be with each other. It's okay if you want to go. It's not going to be painful, which I didn't know. The one gift about this thing, it had to do with the lungs. For some lung disease, it's horrible death. This was not. It was an easy one. And so I mentioned all that, and I was talking, and at that point, we did finally sign this do not resuscitate thing. And I was talking to the doctors and the nurses about it, and they said, well, they can go anywhere. They can cling for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then I asked, well, how does the end happen? Is it, you know, and they said, well, if she starts to go unstable, and we usually turn the thing off because people get transfixed looking at the thing. Anyway, I got a call that night at 2 a.m. that she, you know, to come down to the hospital, and the nurse said she died. She died, and it was like, she was there perfect 1 minute, gone the next. And I said, okay, this is what it was supposed to be. And the thing about it was, there was never, not once in that 2.5 weeks did I walk with a knot in my stomach. I guarantee you, up until a couple of years ago, there would have been a knot in my stomach, because that knot comes from feeling there's something I should be doing. There's something I should be doing to help her. Well, I don't have that control. She didn't have that control. The doctor had many years of you know, more schooling than me in what she was sick with didn't have that control. God had the control, and God decided when it was time. And it was okay, and it happened. And then again, like I said afterwards, when I looked back and I went, this 2.5 weeks was a process. And I could see it once I was out. She wasn't ready to go 2.5 weeks ago, and I wasn't ready for her to go 2.5 weeks ago. I needed to be there. I needed to go through this, and it would be okay. And it has, and it was. And it happened in such a way where everything happened exactly the way it's happened. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is this is 100% a result of the program, of you guys helping me, my sponsor, and my sponsors over the years who kept telling me, you're not in control, you're not in charge, God's in charge, everything's going to happen. And the reality is God was always, always in charge. I just couldn't accept it. And the difference is that when I accept it and I get it on a deep level, I don't walk around with that thing in my gut. And whenever it still happens, I'm a human being, I still get churns in the gut. It's because I'm not accepting anything, you know? That whole idea that it's a selfish program in a way, because whatever's going to happen is going to happen anyway, but it's going to choose as to whether it's in my gut or not, and whether I'm going to be happy or not. And did I want it? No. And I cried on the phone with my sponsor, and I was frustrated and all this stuff, but I accepted it, you know? Somebody said a long time ago, acceptance is doesn't mean you like it. It just means you accept it. And what a way to go through life that... It just becomes easier. It just becomes easier because all you're doing is just dealing with what happens. You know, so many of the frustrations for me in life were always had the subtext, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be. The guy out on the freeway driving 30 miles an hour in the left lane is not supposed to be driving 30 miles an hour. No, God wants that guy driving 30 miles an hour exactly that way. And he wants me to learn to accept that and either move around him or chill out or whatever. But it's just that's an example, and it's a strange thing because my mother had my mother is what I call in my other program my main qualifier, and some of you who are in that other program know what that means. But she had many years of alcoholism. She got sober about 5 years before me, but didn't really go to program very much. And it was just a very unique thing that hit me after she passed away because I was doing some stuff and starting to look at the timeline. I'm 51 years old. And I have 25 years of sobriety. My mother got sober at 51 years old. And my mother took me to AA meetings when I was 10 years old, 12 years old. I just didn't understand what AA meetings were about, except they were about three donuts. It was great. I'm a little overeater, and she's taking me to a place with three donuts? Sure, go ahead, Mom. You know, I didn't. But what happened is somewhere it went in. It went in. There was a gift there that I couldn't see at the time. But the gift I got from her was I got to live my life sober. I got to live the majority of my adult life sober and abstinent for the most part. And I got to see a different way of living. The little she got of it, she didn't get until the last years of her life. But that was the gift, the 12-step gift. And thank God, I had people, I would walk into meetings in Jacksonville after I was there a week, hey, John, how's your mother doing? You know, and they meant it. You know, you go to places that out in the real world and you mention your mother's sick, they'll ask you, and then you can be answering, and they're looking at who they're going to say hi to next. They meant it. They wanted to know. They helped. They're giving me cards. You need to talk anytime, day or night. And that's what this program does. It's reaching out and helping each other. And I really got to see what it was about. The rubber really hit the road, and It was the benefit was me. My mother was going to pass away no matter what I did, you know. And the difference was the program taught me how to deal with it and how to live with it. And so many of these other things that have happened to me lately, I begin to see that whole, it does change. Now, I had to do the footwork. I've got to go to meetings. I've got to read my big book. I've got to do step work. I've got to keep the food and the alcohol down, because otherwise how deep am I getting into this stuff? But then also part of that is I deal with these things clean, and sometimes they're really painful. And I didn't eat over any of that stuff. I came home, I had my meals, I didn't, you know, go run to 7-Eleven or McDonald's during that whole thing. I just did my next indicated step, and I felt the feelings. And the bottom line on my disease, whether it's got any of the roots that I use to numb out, is I'm a painophobe. I'm an emotional painophobe. I never, ever want to feel any kind of emotional discomfort. But I'm never going to grow, you know. As long as I find something to displace the emotional discomfort, I'm just going to... It's like being in a relationship with somebody and you're dealing with your personal character defects and you break up. And what happens, you end up in another relationship dealing with the same damn character defects again instead of working through them. And by keeping the food down and getting through things that are painful, you go through them. For years I would keep picking up when things got really painful. I'd be asking when everything was great, but when the shit hit the fan, I would eat. And it's like being a rat in a maze, and you go down this particular thing, and you get to the end of it, and you're not getting out, you're in the wrong thing of the maze, and you back your way all the way out, and then go down the exact same path, which is what it was with the food. And this time I said, well, I'll go find a different way. And it made all the difference in the world. And all I can say is that if you keep coming, if you keep doing the stuff you're supposed to, and you keep doing the you know, what the program teaches you, and read this big book and really get into it. I only really, really got into the big book in the last few years, and that's the main reason I've made the changes. I was coming through this door, I was talking the talk, but, you know, get into a good big book study. There's a couple of them out there now where they literally go, there's one or two in particular where they literally go through the big book, and it isn't like we read three or four pages and then somebody speaks. It's they stop and they talk about each paragraph. I think it makes a big difference. On some of those pages in the big book, you could read five pages and there's nothing really that deep, but you're going to hit some pages in the big book where every damn paragraph on that one page is incredibly intense and can make all the difference. And so it was doing the work, and it's changed me. The me that was there in Jacksonville is not the default John that came out of the box. I joke with, I date somebody in program, and I say, you know, you don't know this, but you got John 3.0. You know, my poor ex-wife got John 1.0. It was sober, by the way, but John 1.0, which was sober and just enough program to be dangerous. And then John 2.0 was sort of program and did some step work and got some more therapy. And John 3.0 is the one that's really started to get into this, and it's made all the difference because, you know, they talk about at the end of the 12th step having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And you know, when I was first in program, I would hear people talk about a God-centered life, and I couldn't get that. I didn't understand what that was about, and I still have a little bit of trouble with that. But the main difference now is I don't need a John-centered life anymore. You know, it may not be, and probably is God-centered, but it's not John-centered. And the main difference was I was in such a narcissistic whirlpool of self that everything becomes amplified. And when all of a sudden you realize, I'm just one person in this big world of, I don't know how many billion, and everybody has the same rights, and I don't get to, you know, expect the freeway to park, and I get to drive through. I'm one of the schlubs, and I'm the one causing, I'm the one making the traffic, you know? I want to gripe about the traffic. I'm in a car by myself. I'm part of the problem, you know? But the point being is you start to change your focus and your way of looking at things, and it makes a big difference. And I was there to be of service, and I would never, this is stuff that is so unlike me, you know. And all I can say is I really want to publicly thank my sponsor who's here, who was a phenomenal help to me during that whole thing, and to thank you guys for being there and saying things. I Len's here, he's doing this It's a Wonderful Life, and I this play for the birthday party, and I can't think of a more perfect concept for a play, because we don't know what we say. We don't know. I say something that sounds just flippant and offhand, and it touches somebody there who gets abstinent, who helps somebody else get abstinent, who helps somebody else get abstinent, who helps somebody else get abstinent, who becomes my sponsor because I went out for 5 years. You know what I mean? It can literally happen like that. And there is an amazing kind of thing. And I want to thank Darwin, and I want to thank you guys for all being here.
All right, we got one more speaker. Before we get to the speaker, I got to tell you this little thing I saw on TV yesterday. It was so perfect. This guy was not in program, and it was just after Thanksgiving, and he says, you know, I don't understand why people wait till Christmas to kill themselves. And after a day like this, Thanksgiving in the park, I can't see why anybody would want to kill themselves. So, now we're going to get to our final speaker, and then after that, we're going to let everybody else share. So let's get Ira up here.
Hi everyone, my name's Iron. I'm a compulsive overeater. It's great to be here. John, where is he? He's trying to be Jewish, and all my life I tried to have his hair and be Irish. Which is what we do. Would you guys indulge me for a second? I'm gonna share something with you that my AA sponsor did to give me a sense of what the program is. And this is a very interesting exercise. Would everybody here, just for a second, focus on something, look at something? Okay? You doing that? Okay, now, if everyone, without trying to keep looking at it, turn your heads 5 degrees to the right of whatever it is that you're seeing, and just keep looking straight. You doing that now? Has the picture changed? No, no. Did the picture change? In other words, is what you're looking at changed? What moved? In other words, everything's the same, but you got a new picture just by moving your head 5 degrees to the right. That's the program. See? And that's one of the things that I learned. I'd like to thank Darwin. To qualify, I mean, I'm sure a lot of you, I know a lot of you. One other thing before I start, you know, I'm from the Valley, and it's one of my favorite sayings that my AA sponsors talk about, those of us in the Valley, especially since we're on the west side here. Those of us in the Valley may not be pretty, but we are sincere. So, trust that. And then, of course, like George Burns said when he won his first Oscar, you know, as a supporting actor in The Sunshine Boys, he was at the press conference afterwards, and somebody asked him, how did you get, you know, the Oscar as your first shot out? He says, it's very simple. He says, it's honesty. If you can fake that, you got it made. And I'm really glad to be here. It's to qualify, I have been abstinent and in Overeaters Anonymous since September 7th of 1983. So, God willing, December 7th will be 23 years and 3 months of abstinence. And I'm maintaining about, I'm a 100-pounder, I'm maintaining about 135-pound weight loss for about 21 years. And I was just, in fact, I have the honor to take my sponsor to my home meeting. Marty, it's Marty D, who's been my sponsor for about now 21 years. And he's 79 years old, and he's got women problems. And I want what he has, you know. And I'm happily married. I mean, my wife is in the program. She's absent 14 years. She's, you know, she's with our son Jason cooking dinner. And I have this beautiful house. My studio is downstairs. I'm in the music business. I like what I do. I like what I drive. I'm in a great relationship. A lot of healing has taken place, and I still wake up anxious. You know, and that's the way it is. You know, what can I tell you? You know, you guys have given me a lot lately. My relationship with everything's changing. My career. I'm in the, do a lot of production music, and I've arranged music for movies, been successful, and haven't worked on a movie in the last couple of years. Business has changed, but I've never been writing music better than what I've been doing now. Made a good living, and I still get worried. What's the saying? If you pray, why worry? If you worry, why pray? You know, that kind of thing. The reason I worry is because I like to worry. Because I think I know who I am. You know, a lot of people talk about feelings, you know, and we talk about, it's very interesting. People will try and find a causative relationship why I overeat. There's a lot of psychology in here. And I have a great strength. I'm Jewish. I'd have nothing less. You know. But that never stopped me from compulsive overeating. See? And drinking. I'm sober the same amount of time I'm absent. So I was, John talked about John 3.0. Jesus. I came in a Commodore 64 with a bad hard drive. Oh, no, the hard drive was okay. The processors, man, were really screwed. And I've graduated up now to being like, Power Mac. I do all my work on computer, you know. And in fact, I was a computer sponsor. I was afraid to get a computer. I had written music, by hand. And because I'd written wrong for 25 years, I have permanent damage in my neck, and I'm left-handed. And it really looked left-handed. And so a guy named Steve at a men's stag offered in 1995 to be my computer sponsor. And he told me exactly what to do, what store to go to, and to look, touch. They're going to try and sell it to you, but just get the feel that you can do this. And As a result of that, I became one of the first orchestrators in Hollywood here to do everything on computer, you know, like to do scores of, you know, and so it's a lot. There is nothing. One of the things I believe about Overeaters Anonymous is that there is absolutely, it will give you everything that you really desire. Not that you think that you desire, but that you really desire. You know? I mean, I could, look, every fantasy you could live out in here. And if you don't believe that, go to a meeting sometimes and think about what you're hearing. You know? It'll give you everything. So, my AA sponsor was also in the music business. And he would tell me, it's like the cheapest piece of theater you're ever going to... It's cheap entertainment, man. Look, for now it's $3, it's going up, you know. But then theater tickets have gone up to $10, so, you know. But, I mean, you can hear everything, you know. And it's... The whole thing... I mean, there's nothing new in the big book, you know. I mean, it talks about... And what's happened to me, you know, in the spiritual experience. Remember, this is a spiritual program. Let me talk about gratitude for a minute. I mean, I thought John was going to take my line about gratitude. In fact, first of all, the word gratitude comes from the word grace. And the definition of grace is an unmerited gift from God. In other words, you get a gift without having to do anything for it. Okay? And from that comes the word gratitude. And I was with my sponsor last night, and he shared very interesting, Marty, talking about that, and I'm like that when he goes to Thanksgiving, it's about being thankful, not about the food. That the food is a manifestation of being grateful. Look what we have. Ain't we lucky, like John was just talking about. So I did a gratitude list the first time. Because I was like, you know, when you're a 100-pounder and you come into this thing and you stop overeating, you're nuts. Okay? And everybody and everything hits you funny. You know? And so somebody told me to do a gratitude list. And I thought John was going to say the same thing that happened to me. So I was feeling, you know, antsy and... What is it? Restless, irritable, and discontented. You know. And he said, write a list of 50 things that you're grateful for. 50. And thank God I learned something very fundamental about the third step. You know, when I got abstinent and I found a sponsor immediately and all of this stuff. I was at an AA meeting where a guy who had about 40 years of sobriety talked, it was a step study, and he talked about the third step, and he didn't want to talk about it. He was ill, and he and actually later that year passed away. But he really didn't want to talk about it. And it was a men's day. He says, look, I don't really want to be here. I don't want to talk about this, but I'll tell you what the third step is you do what you're told. And man, I don't like to hear things like that. Or here's another one for the third step, or acceptance. It's all right, officer, I'll come quietly. You ever tell you, well, you think that that's not true, think about Mel Gibson. Okay? I mean, you know, that's the result of not doing the third step. I'm sure if Mel had done the third step, his career and his whole thing would be a different thing, but I don't know that, because I don't know what God is about. But anyway, so I was doing what I was told a lot. Because you act as if, you bring the body, the mind will follow. You know, it's about action, because, you know, I think, where is it? I think it's I was told to read 2 pages of the book, of this book every day, reread it, put it down, because my sponsor knew I wanted to graduate, you know, and people have talked about control. It's funny, the reason that there is so much talk about psychology, or at least in my mind, and I'm constantly looking for the answer is, why? Because if I look for the answer and I understand it, I can control it. And if I find out what my parents did, then I'll understand it, then I'll be able to control my food. But the paradox is, if I'm a compulsive overeater, I can't control it. It doesn't matter. And how many people, you know, go nuts trying to figure this out? So what I'm left with is, as my friend Oscar used to say, my head is like a bad neighborhood. It's a dangerous place to hang out. You know, I have to stop thinking. In fact, one of the great name talks I've ever heard is when a guy substitutes the 20 questions of AA, the word think for drink, and would say things like, "Have you ever lost a job because of excessive thinking? Has excessive thinking ever adversely affected your sex life?" If you can answer yes to more than two of these, probably you're an alcoholic, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm left with this thing. So you guys, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's something like 126 different 12-step programs now. You guys found something about spirituality, or taught me something about spirituality. As if you didn't know, I'm grew up Jewish. I was in Laramie, Wyoming one time, and I went into a souvenir store. I was on the way back from a business trip, driving, and I go in, and the proprietor's name was Morris Wolf. He took one look at me and he says, "You're a landsman?" I says, "This is Laramie, Wyoming. How many of us are there here?" And he said, "Six." We're everywhere. That is both Jews and compulsive overeaters, whether you're Jewish or not. You know, so, and just, you know, they ain't going to get rid of us. Either Jews or compulsive overeaters. Intergroups aside, we will still prevail. That's a big change for me. I've been involved in intergroup and world service for 20 years, and I gave it up. I've seen things that I really painful, but the gratitude for me is that I walked out of an intergroup meeting and didn't say a word. Because if I had said something, it would have been about me. And by not saying something, maybe some people will think about what's going on. In fact, in this book, in the 10th step, in the AA 12 and 12, it talks about restraint of tongue and pen. I've done many inventories. Anyway, about this gratitude list. So I do this list. And 50 things. And I did it overnight. And I couldn't reach my sponsor, but I reached a friend, a guy who had more time than me. And he said, and I read the list. And he says, "Ira," he says, "I find this gratitude list very interesting." I said, "Why is that?" He says, "Because you put the fact that you were alive 48th out of 50. Think about it. You know, you talk about screwed up priorities, right? But that's that unmerited gift that we get. You know, people talk about the promises all the time, the promises. I think most, you know, we hear them by rote, but there are promises. The ones that are most widely read are the ones that are a result of it says halfway through. What are they talking about halfway through? It's halfway through your amends. A lot of people talk about the steps and the tools. That's not high. It's the steps and traditions, because the steps tell me about me. The traditions tell me how to live with you. And the tools are exactly that. They are tools. They are not the nexus of the program. But that's how I learned it. But I used to have to, in this program, I used to have to get into fights with people about stuff like this. Because the reason that I overeat is because I'm insecure. The reason I'm insecure is because I don't trust anybody or anything, because at heart, I'm a dishonest person. You know, and so the first thing, we admitted, right? So I had to find somebody, and I don't know about you, but like what happens for me is, I think that when I'm going to talk to my sponsor, that the stuff is going to hit the fan. He's going to tell me to do something. I could tell you one that's a great story. I think it's a good story, so I ought to be careful. I think it's a good story. It's like I have a great idea. So you know what my sponsor says? He says, "Tell you what, take a couple of aspirin, go to sleep, and if you still wake up with that idea, call me in the morning and we'll see what we can do about it." But what happened was is that like a lot of people, I mean, I came in here with a lot of relationship problems and and was basically in a relationship where there was no intimacy. And, you know, I certainly had a great part of that, but I met a lady, and like I said, this program will give you everything. I was so shut down. I felt clumsy at 325. That was my high weight. My first driver's license when I came in here lied because it said I was 5'11 and weighed 260. And in truth, I weighed about 325 and was 5'6¼. So, like, whatever way you think you can lie, there will always be somebody that can lie better than you. See, and that's the thing about anonymity. Man, when I went to the first meeting that I went to, which was a 100 pounds meeting, which is still my home meeting, I thought I'd be the fattest guy there. They took that away from me, too, because there was a guy named Don H. And, you know, I hadn't really experienced a meeting, but there's these women, right, a bunch of women, and there's this guy, Don H., who's like, you know, he's a, what do you call it, Lothario or a Don Juan or something. The guy is 550 pounds. I said, damn, I can't even, you know, I'm not even number one at that, you know. But he's gone and I'm not. And what I found out is that part of the thing for me, the anxiety is, of course, being invisible and all of this, you know, and being forgotten. And you guys don't forget me, you know. I will go anywhere to hear me talk, you know. What a great place you guys pick, man. And what's great is the check you're going to give me when I leave. It's great. No, actually, you've given me an incredible life. And it's one-to-one. See, it's. I learned about unconditional love here. Okay, I even heard that term. And what my one sponsor said to me is that I want you to win regardless of what you think of me. And isn't that a great feeling? I'll give you another one. In 1988, I had 5 years of abstinence, and I had to go to Munich, Germany to record a motion picture score. And it was my first experience of having to go to Overeaters Anonymous, or to attempt to do Overeaters Anonymous outside of the United States. And there was a guy around, some people remember Bill Bluestein, who was a legend in his own mind. So, he did a lot of circuit speaking and did a lot of talks out, and I talked to him, and he said, call this guy Chaim. He says he'd be a great host. He's in Munich. And so I did the footwork. I got the list of meetings, and there were about 15 at that time in 88 meetings of Overeaters Anonymous, 11 of which said Minchin, 4 of which said Munich, implying that the 4 saying Munich were English-speaking meetings. So I talked to Chaim. He says, oh, great. He says, well, I have a meeting when you get here. Just give me a call. So, you know, it's a 13-hour flight from here, and on top of everything, we get in we left on a Saturday night, get in Sunday morning, and find out that we have to write some extra music for this day. There was a movie called Devil in Vienna. It was about the Kristallnacht, and, you know, so there was a lot of interesting, you know, feelings about that. And but I'm standing, and I'm calling my food. I still call my food in every day, and I will today, too, before I eat it. Because it's too easy for me with this mind to say, oh, geez, instead of having like fruit, I had 3 cherry pies. My bad. You know, that's how my mind works. So it's better if I'm going to have the cherry pies. And I got that right away from my sponsor. He said, just be straight about it, you know. Just say what you're going to say. Do what you say. Say what you're going to do. Do what you say. So if you're going to have cherry pies, own it. You know? If you're going to do it. And I haven't had cherry pies. I haven't had any bread. Red meat, which is a major binge food for me, since September 7th of 83. You know? I haven't had to. And it's gotten easier. Anyway, so like, I was still calling my food in. So here I am in Munich. And just wigged out from the jet lag and all that stuff. And so I call him. And so it's Sunday night. He says, oh, tomorrow night we got a meeting. So I tell him I'm at the Fiergerhard Zeitung in the Marienplatz in the center of Munich. And I don't know where I'm at. I'm with a composer. I'm with a music editor. I don't know anybody. I don't speak German. You know, and there I am, just wigged out and tired and all that. And so they picked me up, this guy and a woman. Now I've learned about Ulrich Zemes, and a guy and a woman who was a beautiful, her name was Petra. She was had to be 25 years younger than him. Who knew? You know, anything's possible. And so they say, I introduce myself. They're real glad to see me. We get on the underground. And again, I'm tired. I don't know where I'm at. We drive for a while. It looks like a military installation. We get out. We go into a room that looks like any one of the old churches, except very small, with a couch and a table and a couple of chairs. Oh, and on the way, a woman gets in with a box of literature in English. Her name is Beth. And there's four of us. They're sitting talking. They set up the literature. And then... So it's about 10 minutes. I'm sitting by myself on the couch and talking. And I say, oh, when's the meeting going to start? And they say to me, oh, are you ready? I said, well, what do you mean? And they said, he proceeded to tell me that although there were four English-speaking meetings listed, that those basically are for the military who come in and out of, you know, Germany. And they really didn't have any meetings in English at the time I came, but when they heard I was coming, they wanted to have a meeting in English for me so that I wouldn't feel alone. And these are people who I never met 8,000 miles away. It is very hard to hate yourself, although I can do it, when somebody shows you that kind of love. See, I don't know what God looks like. And in the book it says we want to have our head in the clouds but our feet on the ground. That's where our fellow travelers are, and that's how we best serve. See, so this whole thing is about action. They told me, bring the body, the mind will follow. In AA, they had another one that's great that I think that we could use in OA. You got two eyes, two ears, one mouth. Use them accordingly. I have never gotten in trouble by keeping my mouth closed. Never. You know. Never. Because there are only three answers in the universe, yes, no, and not now. You know. And here I am. And... like what's going on as time goes on, my life has not gotten easier. It has gotten better. Two different things. There's like easy does it, but do it. You know? There's all this. I have easy does it all over my bumper, in my car, because people would say, take it easy. What do you mean take it easy? You know? And I finally got that, like, it is a one day at a time thing. For everything. And that what I've learned is that all the things I'm afraid of, which are real out in the service, because, man, I know my absence is clean. You know. I don't even think about it. I know, I'll have more food than I usually do, because the table is a bigger table than it usually is. But I know it's going to be abstinent. And I know what I'm going to eat today. I'm going to eat probably a couple of helpings of turkey. I'm going to probably have some string beans and the stuff with the mushroom soup or whatever. And I won't have any. I'll have some fruit. Maybe have a yam. And the reason I can say this to you is because I'm going to look anybody in the eye here and say, that's what I'm going to do. See, I mean, there's this whole thing. Well, we shouldn't talk about food because it may make somebody hungry. You know? Jesus, this is Overeaters Anonymous. If I can't talk about food here... And like the book says, it says we have no opinion about alcohol as an institution, you know, and that if we all preached abstinence in AA, that like some guy would go up to the Greenland ice cap, but there would probably be an Eskimo up there with like a bottle of whiskey and it'd blow everything, you know. I mean, we're adults, you know, and this whole thing about not wanting, it's like. Like, for instance, you know what you hear here? What's the thing that we always hear here when somebody's having trouble with food? My food got bigger. No, I ate more. In other words, I have to take responsibility. And I was talking about And because I have such low self-esteem, I assume that when somebody says to me, sponsors, give me a call back, I want to talk to you, that they're gonna wipe the floor with me. So, point being that I have this, here I am, I came into Overeaters Anonymous, and this lady who sort of embodied the fantasy that I always had, long red hair, you know, she's voluptuous, you know, really intense eyes, you know, that kind of thing. And I thought about somebody like that, and she came up to me. It's like, what's even my fault? You know? I mean, I was so self-obsessed, I didn't notice it when people were giving me compliments, you know. And so we started seeing each other. There was one minor problem, is that she was married, though unhappily, and so was I, though unhappily. And it took sponsors, knew everything that was going on. Everything. And so that when, and they said, you're going to end it. Because, like, the more self-esteem you get, it's not going to be acceptable. And I didn't believe it, but they were right. And the hardest thing is when she said, well, can't we get together one more time? And I said, no, we can't. See, me, the kind of person I am, since I'm such a people pleaser, is like, I sort of equivocate, like, sort of to leave the door open, just in case, you know, it's just like anything else, right? So what happens is, the lady and I got together. Without getting into gory details, okay, I'm going to finish up with this story. It got physical, and I want to call up my sponsor. But I'm afraid to, because I'm afraid I'm going to get lectured to and all that stuff. So I call my AA sponsor, who's a Pacific Group guy. And Joe knew me. See, the thing is, you guys understand who I am and what I need, even if I don't. So he says, I tell him what happened. So he says, Ira, I just want to ask you one thing. Uh-oh. Did you have fun, for Christ's sake? That's what I mean. I didn't know how to have fun. I still don't. But you guys have given me an incredible life. And at its heart, it's one overeater helping another. You can talk all about all kinds of things, but here's a very curious thing. When I'm here talking to you and trying really to help you, I'm not thinking about my problems. And I feel better. I don't feel like overeating. This is the 24th abstinence and Thanksgiving I expect to have. Thanks for letting me share. Keep going.
All right, it's time for the seventh inning stretch. Anybody who'd care to, please stand up and join me and just let loose a little bit, stretch out, get comfortable, because we got a bunch of sharing coming up. Everybody who wants to is going to get a chance to share. We're going to end at noon, so we're going to give everybody 2 minutes to share who wants to. And we do have one more announcement. If you're enjoying yourself today, I want to let you know on the 9th of December we have the Promises meeting, which we will have over at the Care Center in West LA. I think you all know where that is. So that's the end of that part. And who would like to get us started on our shares here? All right, come on down. Everybody just line up here who wants to share. And when the people are done, you can just take their place.
Hi, I'm Vicki, compulsive overeater. And I just wanted to get up and share today that today is my 60th abstinent day in program. And what a lovely day to have it be on the day of Thanksgiving. And I have to say that this holiday has so never been about the food for me, because for some reason I never liked the food associated with Thanksgiving. But of course I still overate. But it makes me so happy that today I won't, because now I have my 3 meals a day with my 2 snacks, and Thanksgiving meal will just be another meal. And I'm really grateful for this program. I've learned a lot about myself, and I get a tremendous amount from hearing all of you at all the meetings that I attend. So that's it. Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Hi, I'm Melissa, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Melissa.
And my sponsor told me I had to speak, and I know I have to speak, because it is my 30 days of abstinence today. And that in itself is a miracle, since it happened on this day, just like Vicki said for her, and I know Miss suppose it's crosstalk, but it's a miracle to be here and to have wonderful people around me that really know what gratitude is all about. And today means so much more than so many other days, because I'm here, I'm alive, I'm with good people, and there's miracles already happening all around me, and I'm hearing it and experiencing it for myself. So thank you so much for letting me speak. Hi, I'm Laurie, I'm a compulsive reader. Hi, everybody. I am so glad to be here. I want to cry. It's just so good to see all of you. I've been in and out for the last 2 years. I relapsed and I gained all my weight back after almost a year of abstinence. And, you know, even though I took some steps back, I can still see, I'm sitting here today, I can still see what a different person I am and how much this program has helped me, and I'm just really grateful. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Gail. I'm a compulsive eater, and I have about 7 years abstinent, and I, too, have changed. I am now Gail 3.0, so I like to think, except for the fact that while I was waiting here to get my 2 minutes to talk about me, I was asked to please remind people that there are registration forms over there so for the birthday party. So if you want to sign up for the birthday party, there's also candles over there, please do. And you know, I've been feeling lonely lately. My mom died about a year and a half ago, and I spent many, many hours and many meetings complaining about my mother when she was alive. And now I notice I'm sharing quite a bit about how much I miss her now that she's dead, and how I feel lonely. And it's so nice to sit in this. I like so much, thank you, the three speakers, thank you for talking about reality versus fantasy. You know, I said many times I was going to lose weight too and never did. And today, when I feel lonely, I get to look at my life, really, and see what I have. And I don't have much of a family left. And this is, you know, you really are my family. You are the people that understand me. You are the people that I can come to and talk to and learn from. And that's not, you know, my family at its best. And when I start thinking about I miss my family, I start thinking about the actual situations, and you know what, it wasn't great. You know, I miss a fantasy, and it's not true. And sitting in here in a chair with a blanket among people I love, with enough room in the chair to put my purse next to me so that it doesn't have to be on the wet grass, because at 300 pounds, I couldn't fit my purse in that chair. You know, that's a miracle. So thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving.
I'm Leonard, a compulsive overeater recovering. Thank you for all being here, and I want to thank the speakers. They were really very, very moving, very, very inspiring to me, and sure to all of us. I remember there was an old-timer in the program who used to say, never get in the ring with food, because you will always lose that battle. And I'm going to a big Thanksgiving thing. There'll be 18 people there, and I'm bringing a bunch of stuff, and I said, well, I'll bring applesauce, so I won't be tempted to eat any of the cakes or pies or whatever. So, typical me, I went out and I bought sugared applesauce and plain applesauce in two different bottles, and I thought, well, I'll mix them together and that'll be, you know, only partial. And I thought, that's a real metaphor for my struggle. So I'm in the tail of two applesauces, you know, and this is going through my head for the other day. Well, should I eat that? Well, it's got some sugar in it. Well, I probably shouldn't. Well, thank goodness I still have some applesauce left in the jar that was the unsugared one. And I realized, and this is the old, remember Richie, he used to always say, don't get in the ring with food. So Richie's memory is in me, and I'm only going to bring for me the sugarless applesauce. And that's going to be very, very good for me, because then I can have an abstinent Thanksgiving, and I can really be thankful for the people I'm with and not for the food on the table. And it's going to be a wonderful afternoon, and thank you all, and I wish you all a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Hi, I'm a compulsive overeater, and my problem is Fred. I'm here from Washington, D.C., at the largest OA meeting I've ever been to. Back there, where there's two big differences. This is Hollywood, so you all applaud all the time. And we also have Christians in the program back there. This being the largest meeting, it makes me think about the smallest meeting I ever went to and all the gratitude I have in program. It was sometime in the late 1980s, and I was at a conference where I didn't want to have anything to do with these people, but I wished I was more important among them, you know, and I had binged on, you know, 80 different kinds of oysters. And by the way, this thing about mentioning food, I'm glad someone talked about that. That's one of my refrains, because I eat not to deal with my feelings, so I don't think you all ought to ever talk about your feelings, right? But anyway, I had a terrible binge, you know, and I called my sponsor, and the next morning I got up and took two or three buses to get to this meeting at the hospital, and there were three of us there. One guy, it was his first meeting. The other guy was about to lose his father and was obviously, he was a very dependent guy, and it was going to be terrible. So I had to be the source of recovery in this meeting. You know, I had more time in, and I just had this huge binge, and you know, and you get put in these places because it got me out of myself. And that's why I always say my problems, Fred, it really got me out of myself. And, you know, the other thing is when I come to it's amazing. I married into a Catholic family, but, like, this is a big family, right? You know, I always fantasize coming to some place, and I'm going to stop. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Lisa, compulsive overeater. And I just feel in my heart that I want to share gratitude. This will be my 17th year of abstinent Thanksgiving. And then when I was walking from the parking lot way over there, over here, I started like kind of getting teary-eyed and kind of crying and just thinking about all the years. I've been in OA for 20 years, and I think of all the years that I'm coming up on 18 years of abstinence, and all the years of being abstinent and in the program, and how much my life has changed, and I'm so lucky to have the interactions with people and the whole, you know, self-awareness and learning about myself and the disease and how to live comfortably in my skin, which there's been so many times where I'm just so, like, uncomfortable in my skin. I just want to, like, explode out of it. And I think I've learned so much here how to just become really, really good friends with myself and treat myself well and love who I am, good and bad, and not try to, like, control everything. And this is an amazing program, a transformation of spirit and soul. I didn't even know what that was, and to just be blessed and to be grateful to be abstinent is so much more worth. Like, just the thought of eating all this crazy food and being crazy after eating crazy doesn't sound good anymore to me. It doesn't sound like a reward. It sounds like not happening. So I am happy to be abstinent for almost 18 years. I'm grateful that I am friends with myself and you guys. Thanks.
My name is Nancy Beecham. I am a compulsive overeater and, for goodness sakes, a 100-pounder. I have been an active member of Overeaters Anonymous for the past 30 years, since June 28, 1976, when I walked into Beverly Hills High, and Len was there to testify to that, and I'm maintaining 150-pound weight loss. I have not been in attendance here, although I was in the group that formed this Thanksgiving event at the Palm Park many years ago, because for the last 3 years I lay either in beds in two different homes or in hospitals dying of breast cancer. And as I had a lumpectomy and a mastectomy, and as my body crashed and burned, and as the doctors gave me told me they couldn't do anything for me, and they didn't know what was happening, and they gave me a handicap sticker to live out my days with good parking places, I guess. I said to them I was not ready to go and that this wouldn't happen, and I believed in my heart this was another lesson from God, because I roamed the halls of Overeaters Anonymous for 30 years, and there was something missing. And that, to me, I know now today to be practicing the principles within the steps on a daily basis. And I know now that no matter how thin I ever got and what goal weight I was at, that I had to accept I got a lot of skin and I'm at the weight I'm supposed to be right now. And I had to accept that it took me a very long time for my behaviors to turn around, and that I would begin to walk this room now with joy and enthusiasm. And I felt, why God, why did I have to be this old? Why did I miss so much of my life? And so I went to a man that I idolized, an Alcoholics Anonymous named Clancy I, who said to me, Nancy, 99% of the people who stand in front of me from your program at goal weight, who have been through what you have been through, never get there. You're there, just live it every day. And so I want to apologize to some of you who lately think I'm coming out a little strong, because you see, I'm alive and I know it, and I'm really trying to live in the moment and do what I can to pass on what I know. And so today, with God's grace, I will go to El Pollo Loco and eat my two pieces of skinless chicken and my steamed vegetables and my salad without dressing, and maybe bring an extra bell pepper. And I will write my gratitude list and maybe my apple that Ira taught me to bring, and I will read my two pages from the book. And then, with that being done and my body being nurtured, I will move on to go to some of the celebrations I was invited to, and the food is out of the way, you know. And I want to take just one extra minute now to convey to you from the founder of our program, whom I was in yesterday, she is not well. And if people would give me on a piece of paper phone numbers who are interested, I'd like to take a meeting to her. And I also want to tell you that on February 10th, which seems a long way away, as your new public information chair in the Los Angeles Intergroup, I'm inviting you all to play a vista to my home, in which we are going to sit down and start dealing with getting Overeaters Anonymous's word out there, as eating disorders are being so well recognized in the medical community and the school systems and the government right now. There's a lot of requests coming in for television shows and for broadcasts, and I'm going to need a lot of help. So please, any of you who are interested in PI and in practicing these principles and carrying this message as our 12-step promises, please put your names on a piece of paper and phone number so you can get a head start on this great committee. Thank you.
Hi, Fred, compulsive overeater. Nice to see so many people out here today. It's interesting about the food. I couldn't talk to my sponsor this morning about it, but here I heard it today, so I know it'll be very simple tonight. We're having a bunch of people over, and people I don't get along with, so it's going to be very interesting to see how I deal with it. But I know God will help me through it, and I know prayer, meditation, naps, whatever I need, I'll get. And it's just a wonderful day. Like somebody said, it's just another Thursday, and thank God we have that ability to enjoy it. Thank you.
I'm Trisha, recovering bulimic. I was bulimic for 20 years, and I've been in recovery for 17. I wanted to be here in the park today for my friend Jerry. He died a couple of months ago. And I was her Eskimo, and this program really helped me have a great friendship, which I don't think I really knew how to do before that. And the one thing she said to me when she was sick was to do all the things that she couldn't do. And I know she would want to be here for Thanksgiving because we love coming to the park. And I walked along the beach this morning, which we usually did. And I called her mom to wish her happy Thanksgiving. And I'm just glad I got to the park today. And I'm very grateful for being able to be here. And glad that you all have been here for me and for her. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I'm grateful for this meeting today. I haven't been home in L.A. for Thanksgiving for a number of years. I'm usually back east with part of my family or from here. I'm with my mom who lives here, and my mom is in Israel right now, and everybody else is back east. But so I'm glad to be with friends and family here. And I'm grateful also to be missed. My mom called me from Israel, and she's like, "All that's missing is you." And I know I'll get the same call from my dad, who I talked to last night, and you know, knowing that all that's missing is me. And so being missed is being loved, and so I'm grateful for that. I'm thankful for the program, and thankful for, you know, all of you, and having a place to go when I need it. And and I'm really thankful that this sweatshirt used to be in the pile of clothes that I couldn't fit into, and now it like fits like a little dress, so I'm really pleased about that. So have a blessed day to everybody, and thank you.
I'm Lonnie, grateful, abstaining, compulsive overeater. Today I celebrate 21 abstinent birthdays. Thank you. And last night I was at Dodger Stadium and rocked out at the Rolling Stone concert. It's delicious. That was delicious. Today is wonderful. Nothing at all like the Thanksgivings that I used to experience. My mother recently reminded me, I used to love Thanksgiving at your house. What was there not to love? I did all the cooking, the cleaning, the shopping, and mountains of food, and hated myself every moment. Today, I have chosen to be with my family of origin, of choice, of which you are all here. I was just a bit late getting to the park, but I was going to get to the park, and it couldn't be any better than right now. I would just like to do one reminder message. The 100-pounder meeting that meets every Thursday night, because today is Thursday, every Thursday night in Westchester, will be open tonight. So I invite you all, if you need a good meeting, a strong meeting, you want to share recovery and be with, the doors are wide open, all are welcome to attend there. That's it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Shiva, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Shiva.
2001, I came to this meeting, and I heard the message for the first time, and it saved my life. The message that I heard is that long-term recovery is possible, and that it is possible to abstain on Thanksgiving, which I'd never done before in 27 years previous to that meeting. And I ate an abstinent one plate of food that day. And the grace of that, just one action, changed the course of my life. And I experienced that as a miracle. It's amazing to still be coming back 5 years later. And in a city like Los Angeles, I don't know, I think we should be sold out to the bleachers back there, full, you know, but I think we're the chosen, blessed few that we get to even know that this meeting exists, that there is a place to go. So I'm very grateful for that. And I do want to share something extraordinary that happened to me this year as it relates to Thanksgiving. I've been obsessing about Thanksgiving for about a month now. As soon as I actually, ironically, was reminded that this meeting was going to take place, I said, oh, it's Thanksgiving. Wow, there's going to be some good things to eat and blah, blah, blah. And I was off the rails on a crazy train in my head because I'm a compulsive overeater. I relate to food as an alcoholic relates to a shot of whiskey, a heroin addict relates to a shot of junk. I have the same ism with that. So I was obsessing about a month ago what I was going to eat today. And it's crazy. And I've been pitching about it because the obsession is just exhausting. And a fellow called me up in program and said, my suggestion to you would be to go to Thanksgiving. First of all, I hear your pain. I heard your share, and I was really moved, and I hear your pain, and you don't have to go through that on Thanksgiving. My suggestion would be to go to a Thanksgiving where you care about the people, and you'll be surrounded by people that you really love. And the end of the story goes that I called my best friend in the world. We've been best friends since we were 12 years old, and now recently moved to Los Angeles, and I'm going to be spending Thanksgiving with him. And I can't tell you how much that means and how grateful I am. And thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Karen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. I don't even need the book to know that because I've been running it through my head over and over again. But I also like it's not surprising that our eating careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could eat like other people. I've been living in the first step with my sponsor for the last couple of months, or however long it's been, because I seem to be at a new level of step one. And I remember telling her that I thought there was something wrong with me, that if I'm at step one again, I must not have done it right the first time. And she pointed out to me that that's not the way it is. It's the old peeling away the layers of the onion sort of thing, which is an expression I never particularly liked, but it captures it very well. And I don't know that I really resent that I'm a compulsive overeater, but in a way that I do. I love all the gifts and the blessings and the great joys and recoveries that I've been given as being part of this program. But I didn't realize this until I just stood up here. I really would like to just be able to go have Thanksgiving dinner. I'd like to just be able to go out to dinner with my partner and not have to think about, well, what can I eat, what can I not eat. I would like to just not have this particular problem. I want all the other stuff. I want the recovery that I get in the steps. I want the spiritual recovery, the emotional recovery. I don't know if I'm the only one today thinking, I just back to step one again. I do admit I'm powerless over food. I know I'm powerless over food. Although I came to realize some writing that I did before I hurt my hand that I couldn't write anymore was that there's still a part of me that thinks that I'm smart enough to outwit the disease. Because I'm pretty smart. And mind you, the smart, gets in the way a lot. But I think I don't know if I think that I'm smart enough to outwit the disease, or I want to be smart enough to outwit the disease, or is the disease telling me that I'm smart enough to outwit the disease? I don't know. It's just like, who can understand God? Who can understand the workings of my head? But I'll tell you, my partner and I were driving out here this morning, and she's been coming to the meetings with me for the past couple of years, and one of many things to be grateful for. And she was commenting on how this year has been an incredible year for us, and the things that have happened both physically, like we bought our first house. I've never owned a house in my life, and we own a home. And getting over some difficult, painful, hard, emotional things, and dealing with some health stuff of hers, to be able to be standing up here in front of people who weren't, when I saw so many people this morning who smile, the fact that you smile when you see me and want to hug me still blows me away. The fact that I see you and smile and want to hug you is normal. But the fact that you want to return it is great. I'm so grateful to start out my morning like this and so grateful to be part of this lovely and wonderful family. I wish you all a very blessed and loving day. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Mira, and I probably am an overeater, but this is my first meeting. Hi. And I'm just all of a sudden really sad. I'm just so glad to be here. I actually am here for the vegan picnic. And 15 years ago, I know, funny, right? It's a God show. It's a total God show. I made, 15 years ago, I went to an OA meeting with a sponsee of mine who had eating issues. Never dawned on me to go back. Because she loved it, she stayed, worked the steps, and I sponsored her in AA. And I just put on another 30, I took off a lot of weight and have been on Weight Watchers for the last, 10 years, but I haven't been able to keep it off, and I had a huge loss of pet size that I was very close to. And I put 35 pounds back on. And, the thing that's hard for me is that I have, a vegan pie in my refrigerator, delicious, but I don't eat it. I don't just sit down with a fork and eat it. It'll be in there for a week, so it's not apparent. You know what I mean? I'm not an obvious overeater. But the fact that I put on weight and the way I'm eating, and I really hit a bottom the other night. I felt so sick from, after I finished dinner, the way I had eaten, that's the thing. It's just like AA. It's not how much I drank. It's the way I did it. You know what I mean? That there's really a compulsive element to it. And my AA sponsor years ago had like 5 to 10 pounds to lose, and she said, "I'm going to OA." And I said, "Well, don't you think that's overkill? You know what I mean? You have like 10 pounds to lose." And she said, "No, because I can go on a diet, or I can do it the spiritual way. And I would rather do it the spiritual way." And it was really transforming for her. And the fact is, I really need to change. I need to change my life. And I really need to get back in. I need to do it this way. So anyway, I just wanted to come up and share and, you know, really admit that I have a problem for the first time. And I can use numbers and I can use direction and, you know, guides to good meetings and whatever. So thank you very much for being here, and thanks for letting me share.
Good morning, my name is Carl, I'm a compulsive overeater. 2 years ago Thanksgiving, I was at my niece's house in North Carolina, and we planned that 2 years from then, which is now, I would be with the family again in North Carolina. I somehow think I missed something. I don't think I'm in North Carolina at the moment. And that's a blessing, because what happened is that Carl planned and God laughed one more time. There were things that were going to be going on in North Carolina with the family that would not be healthy for me. And so I chose not to go. And that's painful because I miss my family. I miss that part of the family that I'm close to. But, you know, phones just don't cut it. And I'm grateful that by working this program, I've received the strength to know not to go to places that are harmful to me, whether they're about the food or about the family or about the family and the food, and that I have an alternative. And that I don't have to sit at home and mope and say, "Woe is me." I get to come to a meeting and be with my fellows. I get to talk to people. I get to be one of many. And I don't have to sit on the pity pot. I can if I want to, you know. I can bitch and moan about it. I can complain about it. But, you know, there's no place I'd almost rather be on Thanksgiving morning. Usually when I'm not here on Thanksgiving morning, I complain that I'm not here. And so I can always find something to complain about. It's real easy. There's plenty. There's always something. I have a life today that was brought to me by my Eskimo who brought me into this program, who died suddenly a year and 11 months ago, 10 months ago. And, you know, I'm grateful for the time that I've been in this program and for what I've learned. And I've learned to just accept what is. What is what is. I have to do my footwork. As I tell my sponsor repeatedly, my feet hurt. I'm tired of it. I don't want to do the footwork. He said, "Fine, and what are you going to do next?" And I pick up the next thing, and I do it, and I move on. I can choose. I can choose to go either way. I can choose to do whatever I want to do. The question is, am I willing to pay the price? For everything I do, there is a price. I have to pay the price. So if I go that way or if I go that way, which one do I want? And I get to choose. And I'm grateful today that I have the knowledge, the ability, and all of you to help me to choose, because a lot of times I don't know. I'd love to say I have this down and that I know what's going on and I know what to do. I can honestly say today I don't, and I'm grateful that all of you are here, and I hope all of you have a wonderful, blessed, absolute Thanksgiving. Thank you.
Hi, this is, I'm Sharon. I'm an overeater. This is my first American Thanksgiving, and it's really awesome to be sharing it this way. I can't even, like, this is really, really good. My Canadian Thanksgiving was in October, and that just sucked ass, to be honest. I sat in my bedroom that I, you know, renting a room, and just, like, you know, cried. It was, like, exceptionally depressing being away from my family, because this is my favorite holiday. It's like, because it's not about gifts, and it shouldn't really be about food. It's about, you know, just being grateful. And I really like LA, and I'm really glad I'm here, and I'm really, really grateful for this program. And I, you know, I'm grateful that so far my meals today have been abstinent, and, you know, I'm hoping for enough to get through today, and I'm really grateful for everybody here. Thank you very much.
I'm still Darwin, still a recovering compulsive overeater. I was informed I shouldn't make announcements because I don't know where things are that I announce. The recovery center is where the Promises meeting is, not the care center. don't know the difference, but it doesn't matter. In West L.A. and West Hollywood are different places, too. It's in West Hollywood, not West L.A. So please don't go to West L.A. to go to the pharmacist meeting, because it's not there. It's across the street from the Lions Club. I'm sure most of you know where the kitchen sink is Saturday mornings. So that's the pharmacist. Also, be on your own sweetheart cruise. It's an 08 cruise. It's be something really fun and exciting. That's in February. Wanted to let you know about that. Also, I'm another Canadian. We have Thanksgiving in October in Canada, so today is Thursday as far as we're concerned. And the reason we have Thanksgiving in October is because there's absolutely nothing to be thankful for in November in Canada. Anyhow, we have about 10 minutes left for sharing. We got a couple more people, but anybody who wants to, come on down. Thanks. Rides, okay. Well, I'll announce that just before we finish, okay?
Hi, I'm Dennis. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater and an addict. Boy, I'm like learning patience today and practicing that. I kind of waited till like the end. And so today is really for me is to practice everything I learned in program. Practice abstinence, practice being in a relationship, an exercise being in a relationship. Exercise my steps and the tools and my really then live the traditions that I've been learning in this program, and also to remember, you know, and I did get on my knees. I know to do that in the morning and did my gratitude list, and it's good to know that I was at the top of the list. So thanks for being alive. It was good for me to just hear that and hear everything that's been spoke about, and really just tells me I'm on the right path, because I spoke at a meeting this past weekend, and I really don't know what God's will is, but what I do know is that I'm here right now, and I'm up here at a microphone right now, and that's just where I'm supposed to be, and that's the now, and what I'm just doing and practicing is changing the way I look at things, and the things that I'm looking at are changing, and accepting, a lot of acceptance going on in my life. So, and that's God, what I see is God's grace, and that's what I've learned is gratitude. And so I just want to say thank you, and happy Thanksgiving, and have fun today.
Hello, I'm Jim, a compulsive overeater. And I was just sitting out there and listening, and I thought it would be important for me just to step up and own my place in the program as part of this community and just, you know, say hello and happy Thanksgiving. Last night I got the mail, like, late at night. It occurred to me when I was boiling some water for tea that I hadn't gotten the mail, so I put the junk mail and I pulled out this little postcard of a place I had an interview for a job last week, and thank you, and thank you, no thank you was basically it, you know, and I could feel it, you know, like, just disappointment, like it just kind of sunk down, oh, you know, okay. And then I thought, well, God has something else planned. That wasn't the right place for me to be, you know, so I'm still looking for a job. But and then it occurred to me today that it didn't occur to me to, like, reach for the food, you know. It's like I just felt the feeling and, like, okay, and just, you know, I journaled about it, you know, but it was like, that's, you know, this. I have 11 years abstinence now. It's like the food doesn't, you know, occur to me as the problem, you know. I mean, that's the solution to my problems. And then, like I've heard, if you have the food and the problem, then you've got two problems. So I've got enough on my plate right now. And it's just good to be here and, you know, take a breath, you know. It's like, it's just, you know, I don't even... You know, people say it's Thanksgiving, it's Thursday, it's Gratitude Day. How about that? That's a place you can meet in the middle. So, thanks for being here and having a sane place to check in and practice our recovery. So,
thanks. Hi, I'm Laura, compulsive overeater. I just kind of echo the last speaker. I just wanted to check in and just acknowledge my recovery. I
in August I celebrated 17 years of abstinence. And I came in August, and as it happened, Thanksgiving that year was 3 months to the day that I started abstaining. And I remember being really worried that, you know, how was I going to not overeat? And when I didn't that day, when I just ate the meal, I remember having my first sort of spiritual experience. And I had come to the Thanksgiving meeting. I forgot to say that. That was like a huge, huge thing. It's seeing all the people that were just like me, that I never knew that there were people like me. I never knew what being a compulsive overeater was. I just thought I just couldn't really quite manage to stay on a diet. And and then I came to Thanksgiving meeting for many, many years, and then I stopped coming for a long time. And last year I came for the first time in a long time, and it really made a difference in the way I felt about my meal last year. So I was definitely not going to miss it today, and I'm really glad to be here. Thanks, Ira and Lillian and John. Thanks a lot for everybody being here. And it's really great to see people that I don't often see during the year. And I just know I'm really filled right now. I feel really good. Thanks.
All right, that's all the time we have for sharing today. I hope everybody had a wonderful morning. I know I sure did. I absolutely love this meeting. I get up at 6:30 in the morning to get ready for it. I load my truck up with all this stuff that's here. And it's what makes my Thanksgiving. It's amazing how the service can be so fulfilling. But I would like some help loading it up when we're finished. Much as I love it, I wouldn't mind help too. Robin was very helpful this morning. Julie was here this morning. John and Harriet were here this morning helping out. And, of course, everybody who spoke today, a big thank you to you all. And a very special thank you to our speakers, Lillian, John, and Ira. And now we're going to get Michael B. up here to read the promises for us. Anybody remember what page they're on? He says 85. We'll let John find him. Michael find him.
It was suggested to ask if anyone needs a ride today. There's a lady in the back. Washington, the marina. You're hooked up over there. Anyone else? Yes. Century Park, I'll get you, Gloria. Anybody else? Okay. Somebody call out what page the promises are on, please. 83. Here we go. Michael Blanc, compulsive overeater. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for letting me do this. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
All right, Robin, would you like to come up and lead us in the prayer of your trust?
Thank
you after a moment's pause, which we do for the compulsive overeaters, the sufferers. Will you join me in the third step prayer? I guess you're forming already. Ready? God?
I offer myself to thee, to build with me, and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, and to ever always. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it.
And you're working.
What's your name? I was